right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Longball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You listen to myself, Albert, and this week we're without Barney. Barney is currently on paternity leave, so I've got no idea if he's going to listen to this. Maybe he'll be listening at 2 a.m. when he's up in the middle of the night. So Barney, if you're listening, a huge congratulations for that. Barney will be back in probably a few weeks, but we've got some very, very capable stand-ins today. A good friend of the show, Kevin Fernandez, is back. Kevin, how are you?
Doing well, doing well. Happy with the result on Saturday, as you could imagine. But yeah, happy to be back and happy to be invited back, obviously.
Very good, very good. Thank you for coming. And it's a big welcome to debutant, Andrew Batista. Andrew, fellow member of the Portugal family, great writer and commentator on Portuguese football. It's a pleasure to have you on for your first time, Andrew. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. I've just about recovered from the Clásico. it was a tough one, but yeah, we'll get into it. But yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, as the two gents alluded to, we have one Sporting Easter and one Portista on the show. So that was actually planned. What wasn't planned was Benfica drawing with Moreirense and then sacking Roger Schmidt. So we don't have any Benfica representation on the show, but we'll come on to that later. We are going to start with the biggest game of the weekend, the first Clásico of the league season, as Sporting played Porto in a replay of the Supertaça from just a few weeks ago. That game, Porto staged an incredible comeback. They were 3-0 down at one point, came back to win 4-3. In this game, however, there was no comeback as Sporting dominated the proceedings and walked away with a fairly deserved 2-0 win. It's a result which leaves them as sole league leaders with 12 points from four games. Kevin, I'm going to come to you first as the victor of this game, shall we say. It was an excellent performance, another excellent performance. The most pleasing thing for Sporting fans, surely at this point, is that clearly this team are prepared to match the very high standards that we saw from them last season and the very high standards that saw them win the league title.
I definitely agree. At this stage in Amorim's project, at least, it's never a case of whether they can do it. If it's a case of whether they can do it on a difficult occasion and sustain that sort of momentum with the exits, the departures that will come with being a team in the Portuguese league. But in terms of the performance itself, you can't really fault it. Porto usually always enter the games a little bit stronger, whether it be first half, second half. They always come into it doing a little bit better than Sporting. Sporting ease themselves in where they can see an early goal. Maybe they feel a little bit uncomfortable. They show those signs of youthful, that just the youth in the squad throughout. But from start to finish, with a few periods off, Sporting did dominate the game. They looked a lot more comfortable in all sectors of the game. The fluidity in the attack is something that's just faultless. At the moment, everything's going well. Players, we mentioned Jokeres, even though he's forcing some things and getting a lot wrong, he just gets so much right. You can see that his goals, how much he's doing at the moment. Potts, one of his best veins of form. Morita coming into his own. Just everyone's just playing with confidence, and it kind of showed throughout the game. Porto, it's not a case of they were outclassed. It's a case of it's still an early stage of the Vitor Bruno era, which I'm sure we'll allude to a little bit later. But I think it's just a telltale saying that what happened in the Supertaça wasn't exactly anything that's going to happen again, or that it's expected to happen again. It was a one-off, and it was more of a showcase of both of the team's mentality. Porto being the club that can always pull something off like that, and Sporting still having a few steps to go. But in normal conditions, at least, Sporting do look to be cementing themselves as the best team in Portugal, and they kind of just showed that in the last game.
Yeah, I think it was obviously very interesting to be able to compare this game to the Supertaça, because we had a perfect example of what this game could look like. I think when I reflected on that Supertaça game, one thing that I felt honestly was that this was not going to be the same. I felt very strongly that we weren't going to see a Sporting side make the same mistakes. I think when I look back at that game, there was a kind of unknown certainty around Porto at that time. You know, it was the first game anyone had really seen from them under the new manager, a lot of new faces in the starting 11. And I think perhaps there was an element of complacency that came into Sporting during that game. And I'm going to be honest, I probably had those same thoughts before the game that, you know, how are Porto going to be? You know, they lost a talismanic manager, they lost some key players. And when they're 3-0 down after 30 minutes, perhaps everyone's sitting there thinking, well, this is going to be a very tough season for Porto. Obviously, what happened happened, and then they proved everybody wrong. And they have continued really to prove people wrong in the early stages of the season. Andrew, I'll come to you. Actually, I will just start with a simple one because there's more we can dig into, but just your reflections on the game itself, perhaps the early part of the season, because it was quite a dominant performance from Sporting. There wasn't that complacency. They didn't let the lead slip. They remained resilient throughout. And if from my perspective, I'm being honest, I think Porto just struggled to get into the game. They spent quite a lot of it trying to deal with how Sporting were playing.
Yeah, I think I agree with what Kevin said about sort of the way Porto tend to start is on the front foot, and they try and surprise them. They did, but Sporting stayed really sort of composed. You could see that they just trusted what they were doing. They knew what they had to do. You could see the midfield stayed really organized. Jóqueres kept doing his thing, and I think he was targeting Otávio slightly, and you could see that as it went on. You could see Otávio getting caught in those 1v1s, so that was a big issue, and I don't think Vitor Bruno addressed that quick enough. Overall, I mean, Porto were second best. Sporting really deserved the win. It was a comfortable 2-0, even though the second goal came in garbage time. It was a very comfortable game. Jóqueres, there's nothing else to say about that guy. It's really just ridiculous. I think overall there's setup issues. I think Vitor Bruno, he's quite brave in that he sticks to what he wants to do. You know, I was curious to see if he was going to use Galeno in that left back position in this big game. You know, he was doing it in the first few games. He stuck to it, but then you saw that we needed him up front. He needs to be there always, and he wasn't there. He kept having to come back, and he had the two really good chances of that one shot, that really good shot from out of the box. That was really good. But besides him, I don't think anyone really got going. You know, Namasu, I don't think he brought anything. He doesn't really, I'm not really a Namasu guy myself. I don't think he doesn't give you enough. So Vitor Bruno's got a lot to think about.
Yeah, I'll come straight back to you, Andrew, actually, because just on staying on Porto, it's yeah. I mean, the Galeno thing was really interesting. I was actually surprised to see him start at left back. I thought Vitor Bruno wouldn't do it. And you're absolutely right. They were lacking that outlet because when Galeno plays left back, with all due respect, against a smaller team like Santa Clara or something like that, he's not really playing left back. That's just an extra player that they can play forward, and it's another outlet. I mean, Galeno's scored a bunch of goals this season already from left back, but from getting into the box. So the fact that they weren't going to be able to do that was always going to be a problem. But that in itself, using Galeno in that way, is just one example of the changes that we've seen in the early stage of the season. That, to Vitor Bruno's credit, have pretty much all paid off so far this season. You know, you look at the form of Ibn Jaime, a player completely underused last season, who's now a fantastic asset. Two new signings up front we're yet to see, but you know, he's got those options there now. From this early part of the season, how are you feeling on Vitor Bruno? Because on the one hand, it seems that he's bringing a lot of changes, but and I don't know, you may completely disagree with me in this point, but while I was watching the game, this game specifically, the one thing I was thinking was Sergio Conceição knows how to win big games. And does Vitor Bruno have that same perhaps killer mentality? But to his credit, I think he's doing a lot right at the moment.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I was having many thoughts about Sergio Conceição while that game was going on. One of them was, what would he do in this situation? But another one was, would he have been sent off by now? You know, these are the kind of things you deal with Sergio Conceição. I mean, he's a hero. I love him. He did a lot of great things for the club. But I think Vitor Bruno, it's very clear that he wants to be someone different. He doesn't want to be like a mini Conceição. So he's doing things differently. He's a lot more composed. I don't know if you've seen any of his press conferences, but I'm very impressed by how he speaks, the way he talks. He's obviously very tactically astute. I think he was a bit naive against Sporting, the way he let some of those players have the space that they did. And he thought that Amorim was going to fall for some of the little traps, the pressing traps that he set. It didn't work. You know, Amorim even said it after the game. He was like, I could see what they were doing, and we just didn't fall for it. So he's got a lot to learn. But early signs, I really like what he's doing because I like that he's brave. I think he's got a lot of work to do, particularly because of the defense. I'm not really happy with how the defense look. They look a bit shaky. We'll see if Perez coming in and Thiago Jalo. I don't know what that's about, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. And I think that's why he's playing those that double pivot of two defensive midfielders with Varela and Vasco Sousa. But now that Vieira's in, it'll be interesting to see if Nico Gonzalez still plays further up or if it's Vieira and then Nico Gonzalez falls into the eight. We'll see.
Absolutely. I think I'm sure it's something that Porto fans themselves have discussed a lot, but it's something I'm very aware of that I haven't, I mean, me and Barney perhaps on the show haven't given enough onus to what a rebuild job it is at Porto at the moment with the new owner, the new manager, influx of players. I mean, we'll come to the transfer market in a second. But it has been such a big turnover. And I think, you know, when, and I go back to the super test, but when they're 3-0 down after 30 minutes and all these kind of, you're thinking this is going to be a disaster, and this, you know, this is such a huge rebuilding job. But like you say, despite this setback, and I think, you know, losing to this sporting team there's no shame in that, really. Although I think just perhaps the lack of competitivity in this game, like the lack of being able to put their own stamp on the game, was perhaps the disappointment. But in terms of the end result, I think, given where these two teams are at the moment, you know, Amorim's had multiple seasons at this club, and a lot of those players have played for him for a long time. So they're just at different stages of the projects that they're doing. Kev, I wanted to come to you on one particular player, because, you know, me and Barney have already talked about Sporting a lot, and the same thing we say every week is that, you know, who do you pick out? Because they're all playing well and all top players, and you end up saying the same things every week. The player that stuck out to me in this game was not Gyökeres, but it was the second goal scorer, Jenni Katamo. And I think his second season is going to be really interesting because he's playing a slightly different role in this team. He's playing on the left-hand side instead of the right-hand side. It might seem like a small change, but I think it's a very, very different role to the one that he had last season. It's also the position where Nuno Santos was so important and has been under Amorim ever since Amorim joined recently. The right side, obviously, now taken up by Giovanni Quenda, the new star, the new young star in this team, and he's rightfully grabbing a lot of headlines. Is he the youngest ever player called up to the Portugal national team, or something like that? So, you know, clearly having a really, really good season himself. I'm interested to get your take on Jenny, because he got his moment in this game, and also just the dynamic between those three players. Jenny moving over to the left-hand side, Quenda bursting into the first team, but also Nuno Santos having to take a bit more of a back seat at this early stage, because it might not seem like a lot, but to me, I do see that as quite a big development in Amorim's side.
Well, it's one of the things that always got talked about when Sporting would enter in a big game. It would be whether we'd play Matheus Reis or Ricardo Chicaio, who was sort of a more defensive fullback. They'd stay back and the person on the other side would push up as the wing back. And this season, in both the first game of the season against Porto, obviously, but recurring this game, Amorim was not worried at all about throwing Kenda into that sort of situation, especially with like the defensive responsibility, potentially having to mark someone like Galeno and obviously Jenny on the other side. It's something Amorim never used to do before. He never had that preference, but it's something that Sporting have started to adapt and do. Jenny specifically, I think he had a more positive game than Kenda in the last match. Kenda was trying a lot of different things. He's definitely more dynamic. He's got a better passing range. He's not as afraid to go onto his right foot as Jenny is. But obviously, being his age, being the occasion, sometimes stuff will not come off because he's got more variation to that game and he can go to that. And it's a gift and a curse in that sort of sense. Jenny, you saw as soon as he came onto the right-hand side what he wanted to do with the very small amount of time that he had on that, his preferred side. And look, he did what he's done against Benfica last season. He's got quality. He's come on leaps and bounds since pretty much a failed loan at Maritimo, where he was even questioned for his attitude. He just completely transformed his own career. And even playing on the left-hand side, it takes a lot out of his arsenal because obviously his preference is to cut inside and have the choice of the shot or the cross. Usually, if he'll venture inside, he just ends up with a short pass to a close teammate, it takes a lot of creative license away from him. But he's still been doing a solid job, and his confidence hasn't been at all fazed. So it's going to be quite interesting because obviously at this stage in the season, Amorim will just go for who he prefers. But at the end of the day, it's a Champions League season, an extra two games, and games with a much higher expectation and higher demand. Definitely Nuno Santos will get his fair share of game time, especially for being one of the senior figures in the side after losing names like Neto, Guach, even Adair. Paulinho even comes into it at this point. So even a name like Maxi Araújo is going to get his fair share of game time on that position, got no doubt. But yeah, you can't really fault Jenny too much because he's been doing what he needs to do. Whether he has that entire skill set that you'd prefer for that left-hand side, probably not. But between Maxi Araújo, who's very good in like those interior phases, and he's got a little bit more of a passing range to him, and he's more comfortable in those zones. And Nuno Santos loves bombing up the wing and staying close to the touchline. I wouldn't say Sporting have too many doubts there. It's whether they can keep Jenny producing when we will need him on the right hand side, when Kendall will need a rest because 17 years old, he's not going to last too many games for 90 minutes at this level. So yeah, but I'm happy with all four of the options. Even Ishigai, who was supposed to be leaving, no one knows too much right now. Look, he's there and he'll offer what he does out of the pitch at least.
Well, I think that's why Quenda coming onto the scene is a real huge boost for Sporting, because I've always felt that as reliable as Gyökeres is on the right hand side and Matheus Reiss is on the left, I feel like when Amorim has to go for those options, I think the team loses so much in terms of dynamism and like how attacking they can be, and that's what we know Amorim teams to be. So I just having this extra option where Jenny can play on the left, Sancho can play on the left, or Jenny can play on the right, Kendi can play on the right. It's for me, it's some those options are much better, and the fact that they haven't had to go to the transfer market to do that is obviously a bonus. Speaking of the transfer market, Andrew, Porto had a very interesting transfer market. I think didn't make a signing for quite a long time, and then all of a sudden there was a late flurry of signings. Also, some departures. We saw Francisco Conceição leaving. Even on the last day of the season, we had the whole saga with Galeno, which was bizarre to say the least, but he will be staying, and I think that is a positive despite the 50 million euros that was on offer. Are you pleased with the transfer window? Are you pleased with the signings that were brought in? Because I think it was a very difficult window. There was a big turnover of players, and a lot needed to be done. And we know that perhaps Porto are having some financial issues at the moment.
Yeah, I think it was a very good window because, well, partly because we haven't had a good window in a while. We've had a lot of high profile players leave and then they're not really replaced. And we also had, you had your whole starting partnership, the striking partnership leave in the summer. Taremi goes, Evan Nilsson goes. So those are two players, and strikers aren't cheap. Whichever way you cut it, they're not cheap, especially really good ones. So that had to be replaced. You've got sort of the centre back thing, Pepe retiring. You need to replace him. You've got the full back thing, which has been going on forever, trying to get reliable full backs into this team. You've got the midfield, which isn't quite there. So there was a lot of things to address. I think Andre Villas-Boas definitely addressed some of them. He's taken a few risks with some of them. I think the Samu one is a bit of a risk. The price, the 50% ownership, all this really strange, like dodgy dealing stuff where it doesn't really make too much sense to me. But Samu is a decent player. I've seen some of him. I watched him play a bit last season. He can be a bit clumsy, but I think, he's 20 years old. He's young. There's a lot to develop. The Thiago Jalo and the Perez, the two centre backs, that was needed. I think Jalo is more just a body to have there. He hasn't played much football. He played a single game for Juve last season. And before that, he didn't really play that much at Lille across the 5 years he was there. But I think the Nuno Perez one is an interesting one. I'm interested to see how he fits in. It's only a loan, but there's an obligation to buy. So we'll see what happens there. And then, of course, Moura right at the end, he played his last game for Famalicão. And now we have a left back, and maybe Galeno can now finally be a left winger. We'll see. I don't know. But yeah, overall, happy. I think there's a lot of things for Vitor Bruno to figure out with these new players. He has to find a way to integrate them, but also keep the team performing, because you can lose against Sporting, but you can't lose too many more games. You can maybe lose against Benfica, but not this iteration of Benfica. You get what I'm saying? You know, the Porto fans won't tolerate that, whether he's a new manager or not. There's a rebuild, but there's still expectations.
Absolutely. And I think this is why, you know, even as a neutral for me, Porto are probably one of the most interesting teams in the league to follow this season, because there's so much change has happened. And although, you know, we feel like we've seen them, there's still so many big tests to come. You know, there'll be more big games in the league. You know, we've got to see how the new signings do, how they can deal with the longevity of the league season, the European football and all of that. So still an awfully long way to go. And early signs are very good despite this result. We're going to wrap up, talk about this game, Kev. I'm just going to give you a little tap in here, a softballer, because, you know, me and Barney talk about sporting all the time, and I think there's this kind of we're never sure what the expectations are, how the fans feel, what do the fans expect, what do the players expect of themselves, what does the manager expect. And I think at the end of last season, none of us thought that Gyökeres would still be there. None of us thought that Ruben Amorim would still be there. I'm talking about not Sporting fans. And yet we find ourselves in a new season with the transfer window closed. Vitor Gyökeres is still there. All the best players are still there. The manager is still there. The team is still playing at the highest level that we expect from them. How far are you expecting this team to take things this season? Because, you know, are we expecting them to break points records? Are you expecting them to try and take their success into Europe? Because this is a phenomenal team, and they do have, at least in Gyökeres, a bit of a cheat code in the Portuguese league, at least in a player that will just deliver week in, week out. And have the fans kind of, have they grown into their new big shoes, shall we say? And are they expecting big things?
Well, you've kind of got two sides to this, because at the end of the day, Sporting fans are not used to winning. As much as the rival fans will get onto anyone's cases and start laughing, Sporting were not a club built for success. There was a club built for instability, and the kind of, yeah, we're going to go for it, and then next year is our year. That's what, at least me, 21-year-old Sporting fan, that's what I was used to. So this is the most successful period of Sporting that I've watched, and by far the most stable period of the club that I've witnessed. So one side of me is completely confident. In normal conditions, I believe that this team will win the league. They play the best football, and barring injuries, which is the one thing that can be said about a squad that is quite thin in certain areas, such as midfield, potentially the winger situation. If someone like Trincão gets injured, you've only got Edwards to step in, who's completely trusted in that sort of zone. If Hjulmand gets injured, you've only got Morita, you've not got the likes of Essugu or another defensively minded midfielder. You'd probably have to get bots to cover anything that would happen in that situation. So there are some concerns there. And in the Champions League, there's always that sort of fear. Sporting in recent history aren't the most proficient in European competition. As much as you do get your games like Real Madrid, where Sporting take the game in the Bernabeu, nearly get the win, and you've had the best European performance in recent history when they got to the knockouts, you do have your situations like the Manchester City game, the Ajax game in the same campaign. So it's a case of seeing where they stand in the first 2 or 3 weeks, whether the team have the right mentality and they can ease themselves into the competition and build a decent base for them to then go on and do as everyone in Portugal knows that they can perform, or whether without the presence of a Coates, who not only in the way he plays, but the way he commands the defence, his presence behind closed doors, wherever he can calm them down and make sure that we get the most out of everyone, whether there's just signs to grow with a young squad, and maybe it might be a little bit more of a difficult campaign. There's potential to go far, but potentially in European competition, because it's a kind of an unprecedented territory for quite a few of these players. Let's see after Lille at home and the following games leading up to City and Arsenal.
Kevin, can I ask you a question just before
Of
we move
course.
on? Sorry, Albert. So, other than Gyökeres, we know Gyökeres is the most important player on that team without a shadow of a doubt. But besides him, who do you think is the most important player in terms of having to stay fit for the season to sort of work out the way you want it to work out and for this team to play as good as they should?
In case of the big games, at least, unreplaceable, I'd say it's a straight tie between Hjulmand and Bidal Gonçalves. Bidal Gonçalves, because of the dynamic, he becomes like that third midfielder a lot of times. So important in the work off the ball, and obviously on the ball, he's been influential in every single goal pretty much this season. Hjulmand as well, just because of the area that he covers, the intelligence in just kind of pausing the opposition attacks, not even straight contributions to defensive actions like interceptions or tackles, just the way that he can jockey and hold up an attack and the area he covers and just the support he gives the rest of the team. One of those two gets injured for a prolonged area, and you've not got exactly like for like replacements. So that would concern me quite a lot. Obviously, you can't have a perfect transfer window, it's very difficult. Key members left for no money because, look, Paulinho wanted to leave and Kouachi had just a situation, a family situation you can't control. To replace those players, you need to spend money. You can't do everything. And if you're trying to keep even a manager and players like Gyökeres, who are destined for greatness in top league, can't do anything. So there's a lot of negativity, I feel, around the transfer window. But you don't see too many clubs holding those players for too long. So, kind of got to give it a bit of balance as well.
Yeah, no, agreed, agreed.
I'm surprised to hear about that negativity around a transfer window. For me, keeping Gyökeres and Amorim, Trincão, Pedro Gonçalves, Hjulmand, Morita, there's still wonderful, wonderful, Inacio, wonderful players at that club. So, interested to hear that. But of course, football fans love transfers. They just want their club to sign five, six world-class players every winter. So I get that. But I do think that is an interesting question, just because, Sporting have achieved a lot, but I do feel like there are still almost these kind of final frontiers left for them, especially now that Amorim, because I think he would, if we're being honest, was probably open to leaving in the summer, although not necessarily desperate to leave if the right move didn't come about, which it obviously didn't. But now that he is there again this season, there are still these things left to achieve, like doing the double with a cup or whatever he can achieve in Europe. So, yeah, I mean, again, Sporting are just going to be, from a neutral perspective, a joy to watch this season, and excited to see how they do. Gentlemen, it's time then to move on to, I guess, what a lot of people will be tuning in for, which is, of course, Benfica and Roger Schmidt. And Roger Schmidt left his position as manager of Benfica after a very disappointing 1-1 draw from their perspective with Moreirense. I promise we will talk about this game because I think it is worth discussing the actual football. But we do have a lot to talk about in terms of Roger Schmidt and the managerial position there. I trust Kevin less with being impartial, so I'm going to come to Andrew first to talk about this. just to start off with, obviously Roger Schmidt's now gone. Whether you think that's a fair decision, the right decision. I mean, personally, I don't think my position's been particularly hidden. I'm quite open about it. I think it was the right choice, and I think he's underperformed for a long time, given the resources that he's got. But just your take on the whole situation, how you saw his time at Benfica as a whole, really, because he obviously started life really well. They won that league season in pretty impressive fashion, but since then it just hasn't clicked, and clearly there's been something wrong for a long time now, and finally they've pulled the plug.
Yeah, I think they pulled the plug too late. I think everyone was kind of surprised when he started the season as the manager. I think there was a mistake from Rui Costa, and I think if you asked him now, he'd probably agree with you. It was one of those things when he fell out with the fans, he sort of developed this very adversarial relationship with them. And Benfica fans are, they're very vocal, they're very involved, they're very, there's a large number of them. So that was always going to be difficult. And then the football just didn't help. He sort of he seemed to run out of ideas. There was things happening on that field. I mean, the game, I know we're going to get to the Mordenense game, but it was one of the worst games I've seen them play. And you
Definitely.
could tell that the players were sort of ready for him to go, and I think everyone was ready for him to go. It's a real shame because, yeah, you're right, that league title that they've got, it was very impressive. He did a really good job in that season, but since then it's been a nightmare after nightmare. He obviously brought João Neves through, a great talent that's now at PSG, and who knows where he's going to end up. So he's done some positives, but I think he's done a lot of negatives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is, I mean, Kev, I'll bring you in there. Because the thing I always think about with Benfica, I'm not sure if everyone shares the same opinion of me, at least in recent years, from what we've seen in the last maybe 5, 6 years, it probably does go back further. That for me, Benfica is not a club suited to a manager that wants to call all the shots themselves, who wants to have their own system and make all their own signings and stamp their mark on a club in that sense. It's always going to be a club where the manager has to, at least to a certain point, work within the parameters that the club sets out. And I think about that in terms of signings. I mean, the ones for me that stand out in Roger Schmidt's reign, Marcus Leonardo as a signing. I mean, no one can convince me that Roger Schmidt scouted Marcus Leonardo and wanted him to sign. That was a signing made because Benfica have a track record of signing good talent from South America, bringing them in, developing them and selling them on. But I don't think that's a player that Roger Schmidt wanted. And in that sense, I think that's that kind of thing is the root of where the tension comes in. And they almost just fell in between two ways that they could have gone, because they did kind of back Roger Schmidt. There are examples in that squad of players that clearly he did want to bring in and that he did trust, and Alves is a great example of that, very successful example of that, I think, reasonably successful. And I think this season, player like Pavlidis is probably also another example of that. The problem for me is that they never went enough one way or the other. They could have a long time ago said, look, we're just not going to do this. You need to work with the players that we want to bring in. If you don't, then you have to leave. Or they go, well, look, we've given a lot to this manager to bring him in, clearly for a reason. So we're going to back him with all his signings. For me, it was just too much, half a do six of one, half a dozen of the other. That led to a lot of tension in the team and a lot of inconsistency on the pitch. I don't know whether you agree with that, but also, I wonder whether you think we'll see that reflected in whoever they choose to bring in next, because Rui Costa has a really, really important period coming up soon. There's elections soon, and I think there was a lot of positivity around when he joined. I think he's burnt through an awful lot of that positivity from the people that voted him in. So he's in a very tricky position. And listen, the next managerial appointment, it's an easy thing to say, but the next managerial appointment is vital that they get it right.
100%. Benfica do not have the conditions where they cannot win. They have all the conditions to dominate the Portuguese league, and they have not done it. And it's down to two factors at the end of the day. Roger Schmidt came in, implemented his system, and it felt like a breath of just a breath of fresh air at the end of the day, because they were used to two toxic figures that were Luís Filipe Vieira and Jorge Jesus, two very strong characters, characteristic characters who basically, because near the end things turned sour, felt like the embodiment of everything that was wrong with Benfica. But as time grew, it seems like they haven't actually had the change that they felt like they were having in that first season, kind of like a honeymoon period. Because where Schmidt had players like Gonçalo Ramos, who and Enzo Fernandes, who really suited his way of playing. Since then, it's just felt like putting pieces in a jigsaw that they just don't fit. Like replacing Gonçalo Ramos, that sort of workhorse striker, with Artur Cabral, who's just not that player, is kind of the embodiment of everything that's wrong with this Benfica right now. You've got a completely unflexible manager who will insist in doing the same thing and not adapting even to his opponents in any way, shape, or form. And then you've got the chairman who, at the end of the day, Rui Costa has, I've read this on Twitter, I've confirmed most of them, I can't confirm all the players, but apparently most of the signings from this transfer window have come from a certain agent, which kind of just comes to show it seems like it's not a sporting project. And Benfica fans would definitely agree. It's a financial project. When they can sell, they sell. And from then, they just shoehorn whatever can be done from there. And a club like Benfica, with those conditions to succeed, need a competent structure who will focus on the sporting side. The football and then the financial side will come with it because they have the conditions to compete now and have just something like André Luís Borges has implemented, like Frederico Varandas, who took his time, granted, implemented scouting systems like Brighton, those sorts of models. It's what Benfica were ultimately looking to do 10 years ago, looked closer to doing 10, 15 years ago, bringing those sort of South American talents, poaching from the Portuguese clubs. It's completely unthinkable how they can't do that today. And the answer's clear. You had two key elements who just didn't want to. So 50% is gone. And I have my doubts whether the other 50%, who has, as you mentioned, a very difficult phase coming up in his career at Benfica, whether he can adapt or whether he's going to go to the comforts of someone like Bruno Lage, who obviously he knows very well. And it just seems like he's looking for a yes man.
Yeah, and I think I will get both your opinions on where you think they should go next. And I'm not necessarily asking for specific names, of course. I don't think that's what this discussion is about. But given the situation that they're in right now, what is, I'm not sure whether, not what is the right move, but what is the best move that they can make? I mean, personally, I don't mind using Daniel Sousa as an example here, but I would even be intrigued by something like that as a possibility, because for me, that's a manager who could probably come in and work with what they were given, to some extent. Although I wonder whether Benfica have, not sure exactly what the right word is, the humility to go for a choice like that, who very, not a very well known name. So yeah, I mean, I'm just interested in your thoughts. What the best next step is, Andrea? Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think Benfica have the humility to do that, to sort of go under that threshold. And with elections coming up, he's going to look for someone to appease the fans,
Well, that's a great point, yeah.
to appease everyone, really. So he's going to try get someone that at least has a high stature in the Portuguese game. That's why Bruno Lage is being, thrown about. There was a vicious rumor that it might be Sérgio Conceição, and there was an obvious troll, but a truly vicious rumor that.
Can I just say that would be the best thing to ever happen to our podcast if Sergio could start. So I personally am praying, but I think it's
No ways. I mean,
highly
that would kill me.
unlikely.
So yeah, they were saying Sérgio Conceição was a joke, definitely. Leonardo Jardim, which again would be a mistake. I don't think he's been really good since that first spell at Monaco, but it'll be that sort of stature of manager. I don't think they take a risk. I mean, if you really want to be crazy, this is completely out of the box and it's never going to happen. But I think you could get him. You get Graham Potter in, go speak to him
Wow, yeah.
and be like, hey, listen, we'll give you quite a bit of money, but he's as big as you're going to get. And he can work with what you give him. He did it at Brighton. He did it less so at Chelsea, but Chelsea's a complete mess. But yeah, you need to sort of get someone like that because I don't think they're going to take a chance on someone that, an exciting young manager or someone that can do something with a little bit. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I agree. Kev, what do you think?
Well, you've got the side of what I expect, which will be the big name, appease the fans in that way. But if Rui Costa would be genuinely serious in trying to change the club's fortunes in the direction that they're going in, it would be at bringing someone in like Renato Paiva, which is in the same sort of mold as you suggested with Daniel Sousa. Lesser known name, but the project is there, something to build around the philosophy, something he would try to bring to the club. And Braga, it's almost sort of an example to follow with, okay, there's that failure, but then they bring back Carvalhal, which is a manager in the past who has brought them somewhat success, unifying character. Maybe something in the dressing room wasn't going too well. It's a stepping stone for what they're going to do in the future. I don't see Rui Costa having humility to go in over those directions, and he's just going to bring in another Roger Schmidt at the end of the day. Roberto Mancini, for example, a name has been thrown around. It was the least surprising news story I think I've read this year. It's exactly what everyone expected, really.
Another good shout for a very interesting young manager is Thiago Margaredo over at Nacional. I think in a few years' time we'll see him doing some stuff with bigger teams. But again, that's even lower down in the, you know. So yeah.
Luis Freire, at the end of the day, if it's to give him conditions he can't really work with too well and he has to adapt to, who else than someone who couldn't even sign players for about a year and a half?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting prospect. But I think it probably is all very hypothetical at this point. Like I said, I really did want to actually talk about the game itself, basically mainly because I wanted to talk about Morient. I mean, I'm not sure there's that much value in discussing Benfica's performance because the manager's gone now and it won't really be, well, it might not be reflected in upcoming games. But Morient particularly, I was impressed with. My assessment is, to be blunt, is that they were unlucky not to win the game. I think they deserved to win the game, and I think decisions went against them which were harsh, shall we say. I don't know whether I'd go as far as say it's incorrect, perhaps, but harsh. And they were unlucky not to win the game. And Morón's a really interesting team for me this season, because they're obviously coming off the back of some great work that they did last year with Rui Borges, and they lost Rui Borges, as we'll talk about Rui Borges in the next game, but he went on to manage Vitória. It's a fair step up, and we respect that decision. But it left them in a really interesting position because they had to get a new manager in. So much of their identity and what they achieved was down to the previous manager. So it was difficult to see where they were going to go next in order to try and do anything they could to replicate their success. They bring in Sergio Pastrotto, a manager that I still like. I still have a real soft spot for him. He's struggled at a lot of jobs, most recently Pastrotto. But I always thought there was something there with him, and I have been pleasantly surprised this season in the way that they've been playing, because it's a completely different style. They're playing creatively, they're playing attacking football. They've looked good in all the games that they've played, and they looked excellent in this game. And I really think, from a genuinely neutral perspective, that they deserve to win this game, and it would have been a statement result for a young manager at a club, trying to carry on what they did last season and doing some really good work. So I was really impressed in this game. Andrew, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, Sergio Pachot, he's an interesting guy. I was very surprised when I saw him come back to what it is. The thing with Sergio Pachot has always been it lasts for a very short time. And
That's
you're
the thing.
looking at it
That's the
and
thing.
it looks good. It looks good for a very short time and then it just goes really badly. Hopefully that doesn't happen because I really like this Moreirense team. I like some of the players. I like the way they played against Benfica. They really, I agree, they deserve to win. It's a real shame what happened. I mean, that penalty at the end, it's as soft as a penalty can be, pretty much. And it was one of those things like a punch to the gut. It must have been, you know, being
Yeah.
Sergio Pachot, being that team.
You
But yeah,
can't,
they
the people at
really
home can't see it, but Kevin's got his head in his hands. Or he did.
I think everyone that's not a Benfica fan
Yeah.
just
I know
in that moment.
Benfica had their complaints earlier in the game about a penalty shout, but yeah, that was impressive.
That was one of those penalties that, you know, it's a conspiracy, but it goes to the big teams and never goes to the small teams. And that was one of those situations. It was a real shame, but they were really good and they gave a good account of themselves. And they'll definitely be one to watch. But that's if Bichot can keep this going. Because you know, like I said, he never really has.
That is complete. No, that is absolutely. That is very, very fair assessment, I think. Kevin, we have a lot of similar tastes in managers, it's fair to say. Are you gonna massage my ego here? What do you think of Pichotto
No, I'll back it. I'll back it as well. I
and
mean, I think some of these former stints have kind of molded who he is now. You could see him kind of failing up in a way, which didn't make too much sense. But I think he's always been the talented manager. Can't, I'll put him in the same sort of category as Vasco Seabra. Like, you can see the potential there. You don't see the consistency. You see a lot of naivety. And you can see them growing. Just the periods of success seem to get slightly longer as they go along. And as you mentioned, still a young manager. It just seems like they bit off a little bit more than they could chew initially, and they've just had to sort of accept like those negative experiences. And then there is that growth though. It's more visible to the main stage because that's just where people have believed in what they can bring to the club, and there's not so much patience in sporting projects in Portugal as some might hope. I think I saw that Amorim's pretty much the manager who's been at their club for the longest, considering Amorim is about 39 years old, and that was in 2020. It's not exactly groundbreaking stuff. So yeah, Sergio Peixoto, it might seem like, oh, merry-go-round, he's back again, he's going to be out in a few months, but there's some potential there. It's not the sort of Sam Allardyce sort of Bezerro Vidigal sort of signing there.
Yeah, I think
They did
that.
lose some players as well. Sorry, Moreirense did lose some players, lost a big one in
Yes.
Gonçalo Franco as well, and they've bounced back. So yeah, fair play to him. But yeah, it's one of those things. Like I said, we'll see. If I'm proven wrong, that's fine. But yeah, we'll see.
I think the manager merry-go-round is, as a metaphor, it means something different in Portugal than it does perhaps in England for me, because when people use it in England, it's almost like something that the managers are happy to be on to just kind of go around and pick up a paycheck. For me, I almost see it as something that some of these managers are almost trapped in these cycles. And I put Seabra in there and managers like Peixoto, where you just have this feeling that maybe they were given a chance, some time, they could achieve something, but it never quite happens. Let's see what happens this season under Peixoto for Moreirense, because they've started the season well, and yeah, I've enjoyed watching it. Gents, let's do one more game, because we were treated to what I would call a game for real Liga Portugal enjoyers. Two of the most interesting teams outside the top three or the top four playing each other, as Vitória beat Famalicão 2-1. It was a game that burst into life. Each team scoring inside the first 15 minutes to make it 1-1. It then kind of settled down into a bit more of a tactical affair, and then Thomas Handel grabbed a late winner in the 91st minute for Vitória. They continue an excellent start to the season under Rui Borges, the aforementioned Rui Borges. It was also Famalicão's first dropped points of the season, which goes to show just how well these two teams are doing. Kev, from what we've seen so far this season, where do you expect these teams to be in 9 months' time?
Well, with Vitória, you never really know where they're going to end up because there's always
Mm.
some sort of drama that seems to happen, and things behind the scenes some seem to sort of go awry. And it's always been a case of Famalicão. They've always been that team where either they start really strong and just fall off completely, or they start badly and they just grow towards the end of the season and seem to make like those European pushes out of nowhere. So it's kind of a case that you've got two of the most exciting projects in Portuguese football. But the ones that always seem to go sour and never realise that potential. This season, they've both started very well. There's good bases, lots of young players, aforementioned, like Francisco Moura, who's just gone to Porto, Thomas Handel, goal scorer. And I could sit here and name another seven or eight, and you wouldn't have a real drop in quality there. And even with Famalicão losing a name like Luis Junior, and you still have a lot of quality on the field. It's impressive what they can start to build from here with a little bit of stability, which they just haven't had either of them in recent seasons. Either managers leaving, coming, and just some decisions behind the scenes that don't make too much sense to us, but obviously things that we don't see. Sort of like the sale of Bamba, the what he was doing on social media. It seemed like the personification of what seems to happen in both of the clubs to some extent. So I'm really excited by both of the teams. Famalicão play great football. They're both going to be two of the grounds that no one wants to go to, whether it be because of the quality of the sides, the football that they play, but also the support behind them. Famalicão and Vitória, both great fan bases, get a lot of numbers behind the teams on the toughest occasions to go to, down to the Algarve, wherever it be, they're always there. So I believe that we will be able to count on them near the end of the season. And we even with these exits that we kind of come to expect from both of them, being two of the best recruiters. With Italia having such a great academy, having players like Handel come into the first team fold, I'd count on them, and I think they're both going to give Braga a run for their money if they're not careful.
Yeah, I think so. Andrew, I think it's interesting when Kev describes these as teams where it often goes wrong, but very exciting projects. For me, the very exciting projects, but specifically Vitória, I don't know how much you agree with this, but I've always thought of Vitória as one of the most difficult jobs for any manager in Portugal when you compare the kind of expectations with the resources, and Kev's absolutely right to point out an incredible fan base, you know, the type of fan base that most clubs in Portugal would kill for, but also a very demanding fan base as well. And this is a historically successful club who still have aspirations to be one of the biggest clubs in Portugal in terms of what they achieve on the pitch. The big difference this season, because Álvaro Pacheco did really well last year, before that all went south. I think we covered that enough. I won't go too much into that. The big difference this season, of course, is European football. That's something that Rui Borges has already delivered, that Álvaro Pacheco, well, sorry, excuse me, Álvaro Pacheco wasn't in charge then, but that Vitória weren't able to deliver this time last season. It can only be a positive, surely, to have that. Perhaps it could be a distraction when it comes to, you know, managing the league with Europe, but it's such a huge boost to that club. It's such a huge boost to the fans to be in the Europa Conference League group stage. Do you think it? Yeah, I mean, how do you think they're going to do? Do you think they'll rise to the task? Do you think they'll be able to sustain this form all season?
I think one of the best things that happened was Álvaro Pacheco moved on, and he had to.
Yeah, in retrospect, yeah, but at the time, it was a
At the
surprise.
time, it was scary, but if you watch them play last season, I was very critical of how they played. They had so many good players that were underutilized under Pacheco because of the way he set up. And when he left, you could see sort of the shackles, you know, coming off it, and they started playing some really good football. And this season, I mean, they've already played like 10 games, so they've got more games than most already, with the qualifiers and stuff. They've played a lot of football so far. Rui Borges is doing some good stuff. You can see the team's really good. I mean, Nelson Oliveira, what on earth? 33-year-old, and that first goal, that run was so good.
It's incredible.
Yeah, Thomas Handel, obviously he had a really good season. Even last season, he was a rock in that midfield. Samu's there. Samu came off the bench. It was nice to see him. I'm glad he was able to find a team in the league. So yeah, they've got a good team. I think they've got some depth as well. I think they just lost Ricard Mangas. Did he just? Well, he's going to Russia or something
Yeah, he
like
did
that. It's a
leave.
real shame. It's a real shame. But so they do have some depth, but we'll see because there's a lot of games to be played. And some tough ones, and the league looks pretty difficult. As for Famalicão, just on them, I mean, Gustavo Sá, I love that guy. He's such a good midfielder. You know, every time I see him play, I'm like, wow, this is the kind of play I like seeing in the midfield. He's positive. He's, you know, a lot of energy. He's good on the ball. But overall, they play really good football. That game particularly, there was that sort of drama at the end with the winner, with the you know, the high boot. I don't think it was a high boot. I
I
think
agree.
it's one of those things that, you know, the defender has to be stronger. You know, Mihak just has to be stronger. He has to
I
go in
agree.
there and get the ball. And it's a real shame because it was a great game until that point. And then Evangelista should have made it about that. He storms over to the ref at the end, and it gets a bit sort of ugly, you know, the petulance and all that kind of thing. But broadly, it was a very good game and a good advert for Portuguese football for sure.
I completely agree. Do you know what? I do want to just give some credit to Nelson Oliveira, because when they signed him, I thought, why are they signing him? Right, this is a huge mistake. He's finished. He's past it, and he did look a bit shaky in his first games. He's really improved, and he looks better every time I watch him in a Vitória shirt. And when when he ran down the left wing and he skinned that guy, I thought, wow, this guy's really turning it on. And he was a really, really effective striker in this game. And I think you can see him growing in confidence. So that could be a really, really shrewd move if he continues to build that confidence and keep growing, because he's clearly, you know, at the level that he's at now in the Premier League, clearly he can still offer a lot to a team like Vitória. Kev, I want to chat to your family, Cal, because this is a really interesting team, and a lot of people make a lot of the fact that, This is a historically small team, but they have a lot of financial backing. I think it's kind of, I don't know whether this is factual or just anecdotally quoted, that they have the fifth highest budget in Portugal, allegedly. Whatever the case is, they have a decent amount of financial backing behind them. They've also made a lot of money in sales in recent years, that at a level which no other club outside of the top three or four is really doing. So they have some money to play with. In that sense, would you almost have expected them to be more of a challenger than they have been in recent years? Because they've spent the last few seasons finding their feet. They've not really impressed. Evangelist has done a really good job since he came in. And I think this squad that they've found themselves with now is the strongest it's been in since they had that run to the Europa League, for me personally. Obviously, it's always good to have as many competent, well-run, well-funded teams in Portugal as possible. Some might say it would have been nicer had some of that funding gone to maybe a more traditional club that's struggling or something like that. But it is what it is. And I think it's a positive, definitely, to have a team that has the potential to challenge this league, maybe not for the title, but to build something in this league and be a new face in a regular fixture, perhaps in the top five that they haven't been in recent years.
I'll always be a fan when a club, a traditional enough club, not one of the staples of the first division, but they were always there or thereabouts, second division, Campeonato Portugal when it was the third division in Portugal. They do have a history in Portuguese football. It's not a case of your blank Villaverdenses and those sort of junctions, but it's always been a thing for me. Famalicão have always been a top six, seven side who always seem to get around 7 to 10, always slightly underperforming because there's always an aspect of their season that just doesn't seem to ride smoothly. But you cannot look past a side who just, from the start of the season, obviously there have been a couple of the players that I'm going to mention now. They have moved along. But if you have a side who are entering into a season with Luis Junior, Gustavo Sá, Zaidu Yusuf, Francisco Moura, you have four players that can arguably get into pretty much at least two or three of them into every team in Portugal, including Sporting, including Benfica,
absolutely,
including Porto. And I don't think Braga fans would, even with that sort of half rivalry geographically, I don't think even they would dispute it. So you can see that there's really good stuff going on there. The recruitment, their scouting, that network just works. It's always been a case of getting dynamics right on the pitch, because from that first season where they made that European push, it's always been a case of sustainability, and they've never had that sort of consistency. It's always been a club with a lot of turnover with the players, a lot of loans being used, a lot of partnerships, perhaps because of the board that we may not be as aware of, or maybe yes. But it seems like they've found that sort of equilibrium now, and it's a project that has some sustainability on the field as much as it has had it off from the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I do wonder whether maybe that aspect of it might be what's helped them turn a corner. And I think of players like, I mean, the main one I think was a player like Rashinha, who they signed, who for me still has a lot of quality. And that's a player that's kind of, he's played at a high level for a smaller team. He's had his move to a big club and he's moved on. He's already done that. So he comes back now probably with a different perspective than a younger player might, where they'd be angling for their next big move. That's a player who probably will look at Famalicão actually as not an opportunity as a stepping stone, but actually as an opportunity to grow with the club. Obviously, that's not the case for all the players, especially the younger players like Gustavo Sá. I think it's probably one who'll move on to a bigger club, and even probably Zaidu Youssef, who will have aspirations to play at a big club. But in that sense, I think just, I say it again, the squad that they find themselves with this season, particularly for me, feels like one where they'll be able to build something quite exciting. So I'm definitely looking forward to following them as the season goes on. Guys, I think that is going to be us for this episode. I think that brings it to an end perfectly. I'd like to say a big thank you to you both for joining. Like I said, stepping up in our hour of need, Kevin and Andrew, on your debut. Thank you very much. To everybody listening, there'll be links in the podcast where you can follow these guys' work, both on Twitter, and I know Andrew has a Substack and all that kind of stuff. So there'll be all that good stuff in the description for you to go and follow them further. But yeah, just need to say thank you very much for joining me, guys. And yeah, we'll see you next time.